The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota. So little time.
Today we face an inflection point. One of those moments comes around every three or four generations. We know in our bones that our democracy is at risk, and we know that this is your moment to defend it, preserve or protect it, choose it. And I want you to know, we'll meet this moment.
Every freedom-loving American needs to understand the time to stand up to this growing left-wing tyranny is right now. If you want to save your rights and liberties, you have to start by dealing a humiliating rebuke to the radical left in this election. This is so important, this election.
The current and former president delivering their final speeches of this midterm campaign. But Donald Trump had a lot more than this election on his mind. We're also going to hear the closing pitches from the candidates themselves in several key races that could determine the balance of power in Washington. Plus, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi gives her first interview since the brutal attack on her husband. We'll have all of that for you straight ahead. Good morning and welcome to Way Too Early on this Tuesday, November 8th. Election Day. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for starting your day with us. Today is the day when voters will help decide the future of this country. At stake, the balance of power in Washington and in states that could determine the outcome of future elections. The Biden agenda is also on the line. And as Democrats have been reminding us, so is democracy itself. Polls in some states will open in about an hour. Here's the lay of the land. First, the House. Democrats currently have a 220 to 212 advantage with three vacancies, two on the left and one on the right. Republicans need a net gain of five seats, to take control of the lower chamber. That's the smallest number of seats the party out of power has needed to flip the House in 90 years. Republican redistricting played a big role in that. Now, the Senate. As we all know, it's a 50-50 split, meaning Republicans need a net of just one seat to take control of the upper chamber. We're watching the Senate races in nine battleground states, with particular focus on Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And now to the 36 governor's races, many in presidential battlegrounds. As we saw in 2020, these races matter for the certification of the Electoral College results. Right now, Republicans hold 28 governorships, while the Democrats have 22. More than 44 million Americans have already cast a ballot, either by mail or in person, outpacing the 2018 midterms by more than 5 million votes. Here's some of what we heard last night from the most watched candidates as they delivered their closing messages.
Y'all ready to close this thing out? Do you realize our state's doing good because we've been saying no to Stacey Abrams?
Are you ready to win this election? Are you ready to win the future for our children? Are you ready to push us right on over the finish line so we can do this for six more years?
Now, I'm not that politician. I can tell you that. I don't look like one, don't dress like one, don't talk like one. Because I'm that warrior for God, that he's preparing me for a moment like this.
New Yorkers of all walks of life are uniting as New Yorkers to take back our streets, to take back our subways. People have said enough.
Today we stand united as one voice. And I feel the power of that voice ripple from here all the way across the state of New York, united behind our candidacy. And I could not be prouder to be your governor.
We have a movement, guys. This is a movement. It's not a campaign. It's a movement of patriotic Arizonans who are sick of the crap, right?
there are too many extreme positions in Washington. Too much out there pulling us away from where the real answers lie. I will bring balance to Washington, but John Fetterman, he'll bring more extreme.
And every day I feel better and better. By January, I'll be even better. But he'll, Dr. Oz will still be a fraud.
We're going to have factories and jobs in America again. We're going to secure our border again. We'll put criminals in jail again. Prosecutors will prosecute again. Things will be affordable again. We'll save the greatest country in the history of the world.
Regardless of who you are, the color of your skin, where you might live, how much money you might have, your
President Joe Biden delivered his closing message to voters in Maryland last night, stumping for the state's Democratic nominee for governor, Wes Moore. In a Maryland suburb about a half hour outside of Washington, the president emphasized the importance of today's vote. He also highlighted his administration's legislative wins and drew a contrast between the two major parties.
You got one day until one of the most important elections. You've heard this time and again. I almost feel guilty repeating it. Our lifetimes are going to be shaped by what happens the next year to 3 years. It's going to shape what the next couple decades look like, for real. And let's be clear, this election is not a referendum. It's a choice. It's a choice between two very different visions of America. Do you know what their number one priority is if they take control of the House? They're saying it out loud. They want to get rid of everything we just did, the power we just gave Medicare to negotiate lower prices, gone. The $2,000 cap on prescription drugs, gone. The $35 a month cap on insulin, gone. Tax credits for lower energy costs, gone. 15% corporate tax, minimum tax, gone. The $800 savings for health premiums we got for the Affordable Care Act, gone. Look, folks, it gets worse from there. Wes's opponent won't stand up to his own party. He won't stand up to the NRA. And he is the guy. This is the guy raffling off an AR-15 at a campaign event. Give me a break, for God's sake. He's concerned about public safety.
After the rally, the president spoke candidly to reporters on the White House lawn about his party's chances today.
I'm optimistic, and I'm always optimistic.
The Democrats win the House.
I think it's going to be tough, but I think we can. I think we'll win the Senate. I think the House is tougher.
Joining us now, politics reporter for the New York Times, with a focus on covering the South, Maya King. Good morning, Maya. Thanks for being here. One of the key states on the map as Election Day dawns, of course, is Georgia. And both Senate candidates there have voiced confidence that they can avoid a runoff. Need to hit 50% to do that. But what are you hearing from each respective campaign, Walker and Warnock, about their strategy if neither can break that threshold today?
Well, as you mentioned at the top of the show, this is essentially a dead heat campaign. Neither candidate has been able to get 50%, but what we're seeing is around 48 and 49 for each candidate. So when I talk to the campaigns, I get the same answer. We're cautiously optimistic, but we believe we can run through the tape on Election Day and avoid a runoff headed into December. However, it's really all going to depend on two factors. One, just how strong Governor Brian Kemp's performance is going to be on election night. If he does indeed win by 2 or 3 points, that puts Herschel Walker in a really strong position to sort of be carried over the finish line. However, if it's a closer race, perhaps if Stacey Abrams is able to pull off an upset or even take that race to a runoff, you'll notice and you'll see a lot of really strong Democratic voters and perhaps a handful of conservatives who had been willing to cross over in this election. That presents a really strong performance and a possible outright win for Raphael Warnock. And of course, what we've been hearing throughout this entire campaign, not just in Georgia, but really across the country, just how much President Joe Biden's popularity or lack thereof in Georgia might impact the candidates, particularly Raphael Warnock, who Republicans have really, really tried very hard to tie to the president and his job over the last 2 years.
Yeah, polls at least suggest Abrams and the Abrams-Kemp race not as quite as close this time around as it was 4 years ago. Democrats have expressed a lot of worry, and there's been some new polling on this, about Black and Latino voters, whether they will stay with the Democratic Party. There seems like the Republicans are making some inroads there. And in your latest for the New York Times, you talk about how, in particular, Black men could make or break several close races. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, the Republicans' economic message is one that they feel appeals to folks across racial and ethnic backgrounds. And Black men in particular have been more receptive to that message in the last several years. So Republicans feel that, especially at the margins in states like Georgia, that could be decided by 1 to 3 points. There could be a handful of key voters, particularly Black male voters, who have decided, rather than to vote for the Democratic Party as they have historically, to vote for Republicans. And that could make a really big difference in these races. A number of the voters that I and my colleague Clyde McGrady talked to kind of expressed this, that they feel that the Republican message, or excuse me, that the Democratic message doesn't always appeal to them, doesn't always speak to them, and that they've been open to considering supporting Republicans. But the one concern that they expressed to us as well were the Democratic implications of supporting a Republican. One voter in Wisconsin told us, you know, I feel like Democrats are expressing a message of gloom and doom. I like what Republicans are saying on the economy, but fell short of saying that he would support Ron Johnson in November or today on Election Day because he wasn't really pleased with the role that Johnson played in the January 6th attacks. So it's a really tricky demographic, and it's one that we'll have to watch very closely. But we believe that at the margins, absolutely, that's a demographic that is very much in play for both parties.
All right. Well, we greatly appreciate you bringing your reporting to us here this morning. Maya King with the New York Times, good luck today, and thank you again. Meanwhile, amid growing concern about possible voter intimidation efforts, the Justice Department is deploying federal monitors to polling sites around the country today. Officials from the DOJ's Civil Rights Division and U.S. Attorney's Office will be working in 64 jurisdictions across 24 states to ensure the compliance of voting rights laws. Those jurisdictions include several counties that played key roles in the 2020 vote, such as Clark County, Nevada, Pinal County, Arizona, and Berks County, Pennsylvania. If you observe any violence, threats of violence, or intimidation at the polls, the Department of Justice is urging you to contact your local police, then perhaps the department's own call center as well. In a new sit-down interview, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi drew a parallel between the brutal attack on her husband, Paul Pelosi, and the riot at the January 6th at the Capitol. Take a look.
For me, this is really the hard part because Paul was not the target, and he's the one who's paying the price. I mean, we all are, but he's the one who's really paying the price. But it really is really sad because it is a flame that was fueled by misinformation and all the rest of that, which is most unfortunate. It shouldn't has no place in our democracy.
President Biden drew a line between what happened on January 6th and the attack on your husband. The president said, I quote, "The assailant entered the home asking, 'Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?' Those were the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol on January 6th.
That's right.
Do you draw that same line?
Absolutely. There's no question. It's the same thing. And copycat or whatever it happens to be, inflamed by the same misrepresentation. But the fact is, right now, it's time for healing. We want the country to heal. This is not a path that we can continue on.
Still ahead here on Way Too Early, Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake gives her closing message to voters and pushes more false claims of a rigged election. Plus, Pennsylvania Senate nominee Dr. Mehmet Oz makes a play for bipartisanship, but many of his critics aren't buying it. Those stories and a check on the weather. We come right back here as Election Day begins.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to Election Day coverage here on Way Too Early. We're taking a closer look now at some of today's most closely watched races. Arizona Republican candidate for Governor Carrie Lake held her final rally last night ahead of today's elections, where she continued to sow distrust in the election system. She again claimed, without any evidence, that the election could end up being stolen.
We're so ready for fair elections, aren't we? And yet I know, like many of you, and especially me, I'm worried about tomorrow. Who's worried about tomorrow? And these back there don't want us talking about stolen elections. Well, it doesn't matter what they attempt tomorrow, because we're going to show up like our lives depend on it. And there's not a darn thing that Katie Hobbs can screw up tomorrow to make our win any less significant, because we're going to win tomorrow. We're going to vote tomorrow. And we are going to take Arizona back.
Let's be clear about something. The 2020 election was conducted fairly, and there has never been evidence of widespread voter fraud in any recent election cycle. In Pennsylvania, a Senate race that just months ago many Democrats thought would be their best chance to steal one from the Republicans, now a toss-up. The Mehmet Oz campaign has changed its strategy in the last few weeks to focus on bipartisanship in Washington. But NBC News reports his critics, well, they aren't buying it. Democrats see his message as blatant hypocrisy, considering he's backed by former President Trump and has campaigned with him. On Sunday, Oz hosted a roundtable event with Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, two of the more moderate GOP members of Congress. There are signs that Oz's new strategy has resonated with voters. His new messaging has coincided with a rise in the polls, where he now finds himself in a virtual tie with Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. He's also made appeal for voters backing Josh Shapiro, who is widely expected to be elected as Pennsylvania's governor today, the Democrat in Pennsylvania. To Florida now, where polls will open in less than 2 hours. And ahead of today's midterms, Republican Senator Marco Rubio joined GOP Governor Ron DeSantis for a joint rally in Orlando. Rubio is seeking a third term and is facing a pretty tough battle against Democratic Congresswoman Val Demings. Rubio not only attacked her at last night's rally, but also President Biden and the entire Democratic Party.
The bottom line is this: what this country deserves are two political parties, but at a minimum, at least one, that cares more about what hardworking, law-abiding, everyday people care about than what some, you know, nutty professor or radical activist or laptop liberal or Marxist misfit cares about. We need to start putting the hardworking, tax-paying people in this country ahead of all these radical groups.
Congresswoman Demings fired back at Rubio during her own rally last night.
I don't care what Marco and his enablers say. There's only one party. Working to lower the cost of prescription drugs and health care and hold the riches of the richest corporations accountable, and that's the Democratic Party.
Over the weekend, Senator Rubio rallied with former President Donald Trump. You're seeing them there, where Trump told Floridians at that rally that they should also cast their vote for Governor DeSantis. But that came just a day after Trump publicly criticized DeSantis, who very well could be his potential 2024 presidential competition. DeSantis today is facing a challenge by Democrat and former Florida Governor Charlie Crist. Almost 500,000 more Republicans have turned out for early voting in Florida, while Democrats have a slight edge in the state when it comes to vote-by-mail ballots already turned in. Still ahead here, we're looking at what Democrats and Republicans have on their agendas after the midterm elections. Plus, Elon Musk puts out his political endorsement, and the party he's pushing probably won't surprise you. That's just ahead on Way Too Early.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back. With control of Congress on the line, the implications of this midterm election will have a significant impact on the Biden presidency. NBC News Chief White House Correspondent Kirsten Welker has more.
With his agenda and control of Congress on the line, President Biden on the trail, dismissing his low approval ratings, saying the election is not about his record.
Look, this election isn't a referendum, it's a choice. It's a choice between two fundamentally different visions of America.
The president aiming to paint a dire picture if Republicans win.
Tax credits for lower energy costs, gone. 50% corporate minimum tax, gone.
With Republicans showing momentum in this final sprint, the top GOP leader in the House previewing their agenda, vowing to target inflation by reducing spending.
You've got to curtail government spending. Incentivize people to go to work, not to stay home. Don't pay them more to stay home.
Kevin McCarthy, who would likely be the new House Speaker if Republicans win, saying the GOP would tackle the migrant crisis at the border first. If Democrats lose the Senate, Republicans could also block President Biden's judicial nominees and look for a change on congressional investigations. The House inquiry into January 6th would likely end. Instead, the GOP signaling they'll start investigations into the origins of COVID and the business dealings of Hunter Biden, who's currently under a federal criminal probe. Another likely major shift on Ukraine. President Biden saying he supports no limit on American military aid to that country.
We are going to support Ukraine as long as it takes.
While McCarthy suggesting a Republican Congress could pull back on taxpayer money for Ukraine.
It means no blank checks for anything. We have a $31 trillion debt. I think the American people deserve that.
Time now for the weather, and let's go to meteorologist Michelle Grossman for the Election Day forecast. Michelle, any areas out there where voters are going to have to brave some storms to cast their ballots?
Yeah, there will be. Hi there, Jonathan. Looking really good in the Northeast. So we'll start with the good news. Lots of sunshine in the Mid-Atlantic, the Northeast, New England, portions of the Southeast, the Ohio Valley, also the Great Lakes. But notice out to the west, rain and snow. We're talking about high elevation snow up to 2 to 4 feet, lower elevation rain. We could see some flash flooding in portions of Southern California. So Los Angeles, also San Francisco, we're looking at that rain falling as well as Las Vegas. And in the middle of the country, we are tracking some showers, some breezy conditions too. So Minneapolis, you need the umbrella there. You're out to the polls, and also Oklahoma City. So we're tracking your election day forecast, also tracking subtropical storm Nicole. This is a big one. We're going to be watching this over the next several days. Winds at 45 miles per hour, moving northwest at 8 miles per hour. It will impact the northwestern Bahamas later on today, and then the state of Florida, also Georgia tomorrow. So we do have tropical alerts. We have hurricane warnings, also hurricane watches, tropical storm warnings throughout the portions of Bahamas, also the state of Florida into Georgia. And we're looking at a wide wind field. So the winds are going to be fierce. We could see some power outages, also some storm surge as we go throughout time here. Strong winds impacting Florida by tomorrow morning. It will make landfall possibly as a Category 1 storm early Thursday morning. Jonathan?
Michelle Grossman, thank you very much. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on that in the days ahead. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, top Republicans are trying to emphasize U.S. support for Ukraine as some Trump-backed candidates raise questions about continuing to aid Kyiv. We'll have the latest on that fight among GOP lawmakers. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Way Too Early on this election day. It's just after 5:30 a.m. on the East Coast, 2:30 out west. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for joining us. Let's turn now to Ukraine. NBC News reports that senior Republicans have been working to dispel concerns around continued funding to Ukraine if the GOP takes control of Congress. Senators Rick Scott of Florida and Tom Cotton of Arkansas recently made the rounds on television to say that Republicans will continue supporting Ukraine regardless if they take control of the House, the Senate, or both. The effort follows comments by House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and others in their party, implying that funding to Ukraine would slow down or even stop under a new Republican majority. Joining us now, national security reporter for The Wall Street Journal, Vivian Salama. Vivian, good morning. In the backdrop of all this news, Russia's assault on Ukraine, of course, continues. And you've got exclusive new reporting in The Wall Street Journal that details previous national security advisor Jake Sullivan's previously unknown contact with high-level officials in the Russian government. What have you learned? What are they talking about?
Hey, Jonathan, good morning. So the stakes have been so high, obviously, since Russia invaded Ukraine and even in the weeks leading up to that invasion. And so Jake Sullivan, President Biden's national security advisor, has taken to being in contact with the Russians, which is news because we weren't aware of that contact before. The White House has chosen to keep those channels confidential because of the fact that they wanted to preserve them and keep those lines of communication open. And so what we learned is that essentially Jake has been trying to aim his channel with the Russians as a way to deliver messages, particularly messages of warnings when Vladimir Putin goes out and starts saber rattling, using the nuclear card, saying that he would resort to nuclear weapons, possibly if the sovereignty of Russia was violated. And so a number of times, Jake has had to pick up the phone and call his counterparts in Russia to warn them that this would be met, obviously, with some sort of consequences. And so that was obviously significant because it's interesting to know that those lines of communication still exist. Prior to that, we were pretty much under the impression that we were not speaking at those high levels to the Russian government. And so that does exist from the White House itself, as we learned. And this all comes, obviously, as other reporting has emerged about Jake Sullivan potentially talking to the Ukrainians about saying, hey, listen, this is going to be a long slog of a war, so you may want to start considering options for peace, options to negotiate, something that until now the Ukrainians have really rejected. And so a lot of developments just in these last few days.
And Vivian, tell us more about possible other conversations. You also report the U.S. and Russia are planning to hold meetings of the Bilateral Consultative Commission. And of course, both President Biden and President Putin are expected to attend the G20 in Indonesia next week. At least for now, though, U.S. officials say that Biden likely will not meet with Putin.
That's right. As far as we know, there's not going to be a president-to-president meeting. But the fact that they're going to start talking about arms control, the New START deal in particular, is what we're talking about here. Arms control has been something very significant, both for the U.S.-Russia bilateral relationship, but also for the Biden administration in terms of its foreign policy outlook, and particularly with Russia. It's said all along that it believes that the U.S. and Russia have areas that they need to cooperate, and arms control was the top of the list. But once Russia invaded Ukraine earlier this year, those talks sort of fell through the wayside. The Russians pulled out and there was really no progress in it. And so we learned that they are going to resume those talks and potentially even resume inspections for any arms related activity. And that is obviously a very significant thing given the atmosphere we're in, tensions being so high as they are.
Bringing us important new reporting this morning, The Wall Street Journal's Vivian Salama. Thank you, my friend, for joining us. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, we're going to check in with CNBC for the latest in business news and some insights on how the markets may react to the midterm elections. We'll be right back with that. Welcome back. Former President Donald Trump spent the final night of the midterm campaign in Dayton, Ohio, where he was supposed to be rallying support for Senate candidate J.D. Vance. But Trump's speech was mostly about himself, and he wrapped up the event with this teaser.
I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. We want nothing to detract from the importance of tomorrow. You understand that, JD?
The QAnon music playing behind him. November 15th is the day after Trump is supposed to give testimony to the January 6th committee. And perhaps coincidentally, the same day that Mike Pence's autobiography comes out. Joining us now, Washington Bureau Chief for the brand new news platform, Semaphore, Benji Sarlin. Benji, good morning. Thanks for being here. You've been overseeing midterms coverage for Semaphore. Let's talk about a few key races you're going to be watching tonight that will tell us, because we do anticipate there are probably a lot of results we're not going to know tonight. It'll be some days before all the votes are counted, most likely. But what are some races you're zeroing in on that will tell you how you think things are going to go?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's possible, especially if things are close, that we won't know who controls the Senate for days, even weeks. But there's some races very early on that can give us a clear indication where things are headed. The first big bellwether I'm going to be watching is New Hampshire, the Senate race there between the Democratic incumbent, Maggie Hassan, and the Republican challenger, who's a very Trump-backed candidate, very much in his mold, Dan Bolduc. If he wins that race, there's very little chance Democrats hold on to the Senate. It's probably a very good night for Republicans. That's a candidate who even a few weeks ago was left for dead by some national Republican groups because they assumed he was simply too flawed a candidate to win against a fairly healthy incumbent. So if that race is going against Democrats, you could probably expect a very long night for them, even if you don't know the final results.
So let's talk about the House. Right now, we certainly there is an expectation that Republicans are, let's say, let's put it this way, they're favored to take it back, but perhaps not by the margins that some thought earlier this year. And we should always underscore historical trends do favor the party out of power. Are there a couple races there that you'll be watching tonight as bellwethers?
Sure. One place to start with would be Virginia, where there's several races of varying degrees of Democratic strength. And you can kind of see how far the firewall gets breached from there. If Republicans take one of those competitive seats, then okay, maybe they're having a good night on the way to taking the House. Two, maybe better. Three, you might be looking at something like a massive wave in which, you know, places that Biden won by 10 points or more are falling all across the country. So that might be one good early way to tell just where the wind is blowing in the House, even if, again, it might take a very long time to call a lot of those races.
All right, and let's do it. Let's talk about Donald Trump. We just played the footage last night teasing this announcement, now saying it'll be November 15th. But you guys have got some reporting about some of the calculation behind the scenes that went into when Trump may or may not announce his candidacy. Tell us what you found.
That's right. Our own Shelby Talca was talking to people in Trump world all day yesterday, and they were just in, I wouldn't use the word panic exactly, but excitedly discussing the possibility that Donald Trump would announce his presidential campaign right then at that rally, overshadowing the candidate J.D. Vance that he was there to support, completely unexpectedly, with seemingly no preparation. Now, this might seem like a weird and surprising thing, but it's actually not that unusual. Donald Trump has been sort of threatening to make a sudden presidential announcement at various points, going all the way back to last year. But it did catch a lot of people off guard, and they took it more seriously than perhaps they usually do some of these suggestions from Trump that he might make an announcement. Now, the midterms were always seen as a very bright line for Trump, so it's not surprising he's teasing an announcement after them. National Republicans were always telling him, you have to wait until they're after. We want to keep the focus on Biden. We want to keep the focus on our candidates. Then you can get into midterms. But it's clear that Trump is itching to get involved early. He kind of took the first shot at his expected rival, Ron DeSantis, the other day in a rally, calling him Ron DeSanctimonious, something that national Republicans were not happy with. And sometimes when Trump gets pushback from allies, he responds by making them sweat in some way. And teasing an announcement all day that doesn't happen would certainly fit that mold.
It certainly would not be out of character also to make an event like that about himself from Donald Trump. But I will say I can't think of a better turnout driver for Democrats than if Trump had jumped in last night. Semaphore's Benji Sarlin, thank you for joining us this morning. Still ahead here, Elon Musk gets political on Twitter ahead of the midterms. What he's telling voters about today's elections. Straight ahead on Way Too Early. Welcome back, and it's time now for business. And for that, let's bring in CNBC's Arabile Gumede, who joins us live from London. Good morning, Arabile. Wall Street, looking ahead to the midterm elections today, how are the markets shaping up this morning?
Yeah, good morning, Jonathan. Look, the markets are certainly looking at it with a cautious optimism by the seams of things. There is a slight tinge of green coming up in that market picture. Those midterm elections, certainly the key element to look out for as the markets sort of get a sense of what will happen then to Congress. Will the House and the House of Representatives flip both ways, or will it just be the one? So key areas will certainly be looked at to kind of detect which way the market could certainly go and which direction then Congress will also go. So key elements there to look out for will be the election. Of course, you do have that inflation number expected out on Thursday, which also is an element to look out for. But certainly the midterms occupying the most important parts, I guess, of the investors' minds this afternoon.
So Twitter's new CEO and owner, Elon Musk, came out yesterday endorsing Republicans for the midterm election cycle, telling voters to cast their ballots for GOP candidates for Congress. A lot of Democrats will say, well, this was no surprise. Musk seemed to be moving Twitter to the right. But tell us a little bit about what prompted the move and what the reaction has been from users and even advertisers.
Yeah, so it does seem as though that a vote for Republicans may be perhaps a little bit more favorable for tech companies then, right? Of course, Elon Musk saying then that voters should be independent-minded and, quote, shared power curbs the worst excess of both parties. Now, Elon Musk has previously voted Democrat, but says that this time around it is helpful to be voting Republican, as I said, helping perhaps the tech counters a little bit more. It does, of course, impact what advertisers will begin to think, whether this will be helpful in any sense. It does, however, go back to his free speech comment, saying that Twitter is meant to be a free speech platform, which does seem to hold true with this statement, certainly is the case. But what that does, of course, to skewing investors' minds and even voters' thoughts and minds as well, will kind of give a clearer picture of where to from here and what it is exactly that Elon Musk is supposedly focusing on. But clearly the economy being one of those, inflation being a key element, and just what that means for tech regulation will also be very important. Republicans seemingly the better ones to choose, according to Elon Musk.
And with the election almost over, a lot of folks are going to need some vacations. One option, perhaps Airbnb. Users there will soon be able to see the total price of bookings, including all fees before taxes. Give us a quick sense as to why that's important.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've ever taken a look at this, right, Jonathan? You go and you book on Airbnb, you've decided on a price that you prefer for the B&B that you're looking for, and then when you get your checkout price, unfortunately, it's entirely different to what you had initially planned. So that seems to be something of the past now. They're saying that they're going to make sure that they include cleaning fees, service fees, but not taxes in the initial amount. It will also be shown on the map, the filtering page, as well as the listing page, to ensure that the full amount is what you know before you choose the place you're going to stay at. So certainly one of those complaints that Twitter is, or rather Airbnb, is certainly trying to fix at this stage.
All right. CNBC's Arabile Gumede joining us live from London. Thank you, as always. Up next here, three big clues that could indicate which party will control Congress for the next 2 years. And coming up on Morning Joe, Steve Kornacki will be at his natural habitat, the big board, breaking down the races to watch on this election day. And as polls open up across the country this morning, we'll have live reporting from Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Wisconsin. Morning Joe is just a few moments away.
South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.